In March of 2002, I left my church after attending there for a few decades, actually. It was a difficult decision, but it quickly became obvious that it was God's will. At that point in my life, I thought I was a pretty good Christian, but I soon learned that I was nowhere near. In reality, I had no relationship with God. Oh, sure, I knew he was up there somewhere, but I thought being a good Christian was all about doing good deeds and being a good guy. I certainly had the appearances of a model Christian on Sunday, but from Monday to Saturday was a whole different ballgame. I was clearly going in the wrong direction. On the first Sunday of my planned church hopping, I found myself at a church in Lethbridge. I heard the pastor was really good, but if I'm being honest, what I really wanted to do was to check out the cool contemporary music they sang to. The music was great, but I quickly became disappointed as it turned out to be a mission Sunday. I need to confess that back then there were two things in my life that I couldn't have cared less about: missions and children. God really does have a sense of humor. However, on that day, I did not see the humor, and I had no intentions of returning. There were other churches with great music and ones not so focused on missions, I thought. Thank God that a few friends persuaded me to try this church one more time. So my second Sunday at this church, and guess what? Another missionary. Who knew March was Mission Month? However, this time it was a guy named Fraser from an organization I'd never heard of before, Compassion Canada. But I did the polite thing and listened to him, but with very little interest. He was talking about children, after all. But when he finished, he invited us to go to Kenya and Uganda with him to see what true desperate poverty really looks like and what Compassion is doing about it. To this day, folks, I cannot explain it to you, but I immediately knew that God wanted me to go. It was so strange because, as I mentioned earlier, I had no personal relationship with him. No matter, I went to see Fraser immediately after the service. Fast forward to October, as we were flying into Nairobi, my main thoughts were about how I couldn't wait for the two-day safari week at the end of the trip. But first I had to get down to business of missions. And our first day was a Sunday, so we went to an Anglican church, and then we went to a non-denominational church. And I thought, wow, this mission stuff is great. But the next day, everything would change. Everything. On Monday, October 26th, our first visit to a compassion project was in a slum called Mathari Valley. Fraser admitted that he was throwing us into the fire because this was easily one of the worst places Compassion serves in the 25 countries that we work in. The community, if you can imagine, is about 400 meters wide by about 2 kilometers long, with a population of somewhere between 750,000 and 1 million people. As we were descending into the valley, I was beginning to get a good look as to what I was going into, but when I saw a woman washing clothes in the filthiest, disgusting river I'd ever seen, I looked at Fraser and I said, "That is just wrong that she has to do that." He agreed, but then he said, "If you think that's wrong, John, what would you say if I told you that is also their drinking water?" I immediately told him I would go back to the bus and wait for everyone. I knew I was way too emotional for this kind of stuff, and I would embarrass myself, our team, and Compassion. He said that I had come too far to back out now, and would I let him pray for me? I very reluctantly said yes, but amazingly, God gave me the courage to continue into the nightmare that I saw spread out in front of me. A true miracle, believe me. On the way down, he said he couldn't tell us what was in the children's hair, what was on their hands or in their clothes, but many will come up to us and want to shake our hands, look for a hug, and hopefully even some love. If we could find it in our hearts to give them that love, he said, please do. And you know what? That's exactly what I did. Another true miracle. You had to know me to understand that. As we made our way to the Compassion Center, I saw things I could never, ever have imagined. I was overwhelmed as I found myself in one of the worst conditions in the world, in which people have no option but to live in. As we continued to walk towards the Compassion Center, I saw toddlers sitting or playing by thin streams of open sewage. They would be gumming unknown objects and exploring their world of rusty bottle caps, garbage, and excrement-saturated mud. And I am so ashamed to say that my first thoughts were, what kind of a mother would allow her baby to play here? Very regrettable first reactions, because I soon discovered the answer to my question is the kind of mother who allows this is very often a dead mother. Then my question turned to God and asking him, why would you allow this to happen? Why is it so unbelievably harsh for so many when so many have it so good? I was not going to get my answer at that moment, however. And I couldn't wait to get to the center, hoping that things would look a lot better. But the building certainly didn't. The school was a mud hut with holes in the walls. It had dirt floors, no desks, no books, and virtually no paper, no pencils. The children had to remember what they learned the moment they learned it, but they all knew that this was an opportunity to get an education and escape Mathari Valley, and they were not about to squander that opportunity. But one thing that was very obvious from the moment I arrived at the Compassion Center was that the kids were the happiest I have ever seen. And I know that Jose and some of those of you that have been to the projects in El Salvador understand what I mean there. After observing the children for a while, I just had to ask the pastor and the director how it was possible that they could be so happy when they clearly had nothing. They both looked at me with, I don't know, kind of a pitying look. And the director said, I beg to differ, but they do have something very important. They have Jesus, and he makes all the difference in the world. I was so clearly out of my element because it was obvious I did not understand poverty one iota, and it was also obvious that I didn't understand faith either. So in understanding poverty, we need to understand clearly that the greatest tool of the enemy and the least understood tactic of hell is poverty. Let's go way back to the beginning of the Bible, Genesis 1, to be precise. First, God created the world and saw that it was good. Then he created human beings and saw that it was very good. Interestingly enough, God never intended anyone to be poor. Poverty was not in their vocabulary back then. God intended everything to be provided for, and it was perfect. Then came the fall, and sin entered the picture. Satan whispered into Adam and Eve's ear that they could be equal to God. All you have to do is eat an apple from the forbidden tree, and the only reason it is forbidden is because God doesn't want you to be as smart as he is. If you eat it, you will become his equal, and all of the commandments will not apply to you anymore. We know this sin destroyed their relationship with God and each other. Both Adam and Eve and all that came after suffered in relationship, suffered in childbirth, in economics, and the sweat of their brow. All of this we know. But here's what we don't often understand. I said earlier that poverty was unheard of and even unthinkable, but after the fall, poverty became the default setting of the entire world. And our fundamental need now has become and remains reconciliation and to right our relationship with our Creator. Christ then comes to earth, and he now becomes friends with the poor, because by the time he comes to earth, there is lots of poverty. Jesus was not born into a life of opulence. On the contrary, he was not very well off at all. But more than just being friends with the poor, he becomes an advocate for the poor. And he said in Matthew's gospel that when you serve the poor, you are actually serving me. So let's go into the strategic nature of poverty. And to do that, let's go back to Genesis 1 again and look at it just a little bit differently. As God was creating earth, he had an audience. It is clear that there were spirits watching the creation process. When he made his ultimate creation, Adam and Eve, he did something different than for all the rest. He made them in his image, and he was so very pleased. One of those witnesses to all of this was Satan, and he noticed something. Ever since he was cast out of heaven, he was at war with God and always looking for ways to get even with God, but he couldn't find any weakness, but eventually he figured something out. He saw that God loved those human beings more than anything else he ever created. And his love was amazing. Satan is smart, and he quickly figured a way to hurt God, to get even, and that was to hurt his human beings. And he figured out that the earlier he could do that, the more effective he would be. And so as a result, we have by no accident an entire industry devoted to ending children's lives in the sanctuary of their mother's womb. Did you know that almost half of all babies that are conceived are aborted now? If perchance you beat the odds and survived abortion, then Satan enacts his plan B, and that is child neglect and painful abuse. We work in places where we have to go in and rescue children as young as 6 years old, 7 years old, from brothels, from slavery, from dangerous gangs. We fight against that sort of thing every single day. This tool of neglect and abuse is a very well-oiled machine, and it is very, very effective for Satan. But he has one more tool if those two don't work, and it is the most effective one of all. That tool is poverty. The World Bank tells us there are two levels of poverty. The basic level are those who live on $2.75 per day. This is a large part of the world's population, but there's one more level down from that that the World Bank calls extreme or absolute poverty, and these folks earn less than $1.90 a day. In 2002, I would have said that 82% of all of our Compassion Children's families live in this category. I'm excited to tell you that that percentage is much less, but I can't get into that whole conversation about that right now. But in the last 20 years, desperate poverty has indeed been cut in half. But for 1 billion people still in this lower category, the worst aspect of their poverty remains. It brings a cruel message, a damaging message. Poverty tells children, you don't matter. You are going to fail just like your father and your father's father. Nobody cares or even loves you. Not even God cares. You are useless. All of these messages are told to a child by poverty. It doesn't speak to children verbally, obviously, but their surroundings certainly do. The context of their situation certainly does. It speaks, and it speaks volumes. And the children believe those lies. They believe God doesn't love them. He only loves foreigners. If God loved us, we wouldn't be poor. And so these damaging messages are beat into the minds and hearts of these little children of very young ages. And poverty breeds fatalism and apathy in adults of every age. I see it so often in my travels around the world, but it doesn't have to be this way, folks. There is a solution. It isn't this way by chance or because God didn't know what he was doing. It is because he has an enemy with a brilliant plan, but thankfully, God has a better plan. Plan A. We are in a spiritual war. We as Christians are fighting Satan for the hearts and souls of these children. He is very subtle in his attacks on everyone, but especially children, but even young adults in school or in college. If Satan can control children, he can control the war. It is reality that theological knowledge is developed in a child by age 14. What they believe by that age, they will most likely believe when they die, unless God somehow intervenes in their life. That is why our main focus is children. The term missions that we use in church is so sterile, so fuzzy. We think of slideshows and sunsets and little trinkets from Africa. But in fact, we as Christians are engaged in this war, and it is not about programs. It is all about people. Jesus was all about people. And ministry to children is the front line of this war. If any one of you helps teach children in Sunday school or any children's mission ministries in any way, you need to know that you are on the front line. You are strategic, not just filling time or babysitting. You are making a positive impact. Satan's goal is to recruit and neutralize the emerging generation of spiritual warriors, and children in this war are the ultimate prize. The most loving and strategic interventions that can be done in your church, your home, and indeed what we are doing through Compassion's ministry around the world is to bring them through the local church to their Heavenly Father. The moment a child comprehends that God loves them, their divine potential is unleashed. That is why Compassion chooses to work exclusively with the local church around the world. Compassion's ministry is not about alleviating poverty or feeding, clothing, or even educating children. Of course we do all of these things, but our ministry is child evangelism and discipleship through their local church. That is what drives us. That is our agenda, bringing children and their families to Christ. They themselves will then become change agents for their community. When a child in poverty encounters Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior, they go from being worthless to priceless in one single step. We are going to stop the strategy of Satan and of hell by being Christ-centered, church-based, and child-focused. So what is God's plan A? It's his church. It is the great hope for the entire world and God's chosen instrument to advance his kingdom. He has no plan B. Compassion's view of the church is molded by Christ's view. We do not work through the church, we work with the church. I will challenge anyone when I hear or see the church being used as a tool rather than a mission partner. I will forever challenge any organization that drifts from the church, and sadly, there are many more that are drifting that are not. I love that you can go to any one of our 7,000 plus partner churches and you will not see a Compassion sign or ever see a non-national working or volunteering for any jobs. Many people in the communities we serve, they don't even realize it's a Compassion project. The church is not part of our marketing strategy. We want to be part of their mission strategy. The church does not exist to help us achieve our mission. The church is our mission. Because of this, the local people see their church as the champion. We saw over 159,000 children and their family members give their lives to Christ last year alone. Folks, that works out to one every 3.5 to 4 minutes of every single day. 1 every 3.5 to 4 minutes, pardon me, which means 400 to 500 every single day give their lives to Christ through our programs. And the average growth of our church partners from the day they begin to their fourth anniversary is astounding 300%. And you heard Jose say how they went from 150 children to, what was it, 290-something? And that's families, right? That's not just the kids. That's families in this. 300, yeah. I came home from Africa a very, very broken man. I hated everything about my life and the obscene opulence we desperately hang on to in our society. I was angry with everyone, and I had no idea how I was ever going to be able to live here with peace in my heart again. Don't get me wrong, I still dislike and struggle with our society. But with the help of a couple of wonderful people, and most certainly by the grace of God, I have made it and now stand in front of you all these years later, and my passion is children. And it continues to grow. And my passion is missions, and my passion is Jesus. That is an amazing gift I have received from God. I needed to learn that I am not going to change our society, but I can help people change their attitudes, and I learned that I can't change the world, but I can change the world for one child. And I learned the answer to my question, how can God possibly allow so much suffering, pain, and heartbreak in the first place? Thanks to the compassion staff and volunteers in our partner churches in the countries I have had the honor to visit, but especially thanks to the sponsor children and their families, both my own 11 children that I sponsor and others I have visited as well. What they have taught me, not only with their words, but even more clearly with their actions, is that God is so very, very faithful no matter what our circumstances. The faith I have seen has humbled me beyond words. They totally understand that what matters is what we do with the span of our life that He gives us, whether short or long, what kind of people we become, that our real lives are still to come, an entire eternity ahead, that knowing Jesus gives them the most important thing of all, hope. God is clearly doing His job. So God is not the one we should be asking after all. It is us, His children. We should be asking why we would allow this to happen in the world God gave us to take care of. It is clear to me that we live in a world that is much more unjust than I ever could have imagined, where too many evil people hold power and too many good people are not doing enough to make the darkness turn to light. It is also very clear to me, much to my deep sadness, that I can't fix it all. But I can hold high a single candle of hope and light that my Heavenly Father has given me against the darkness. I have faith in the end, that in the end God's purpose for our world will not be thwarted. And if the darkness seems awfully big for my little candle, that's okay, because there are a lot of other candles being held high out there, already giving the light of hope to over 2 million compassion children now all around the world. But the challenge, folks, is that 2 million is just a small drop in the bucket. It is a start, but we must all be ready to answer the question with action. Normally, I would show a little video, but I want to save a little extra time in case you guys have any questions and we want to explain this $2,000 thing. So in closing, I invite you to become a part of this amazing strategy to work with compassion as we continue to remove children and their families from the most desperate poverty. Become a part of this amazing strategy by giving them the true hope, the hope that only Jesus can give them, the hope that will continue to bring them to our Heavenly Father. If you don't sponsor a child through compassion, I encourage you this morning to change the world for one or more children. Come to the table at the end of the service and sponsor. But don't ever sponsor a child through compassion because you feel sorry for them. That is the wrong motive. Don't sponsor because you are embarrassed that you have so much and they so little. Sponsor because you absolutely love them. Sponsor because Jesus made it so incredibly clear that children are His favorites. Please allow me to share a few examples of what I mean by that. In Matthew 18:1, the disciples asked Jesus, "Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" Jesus called a little child to Him and sat him down between them. Then He said, "Unless you become as this little one, you won't even enter the kingdom of heaven. Whoever humbles themselves as this little child, they are the greatest in heaven." Then in verse 5 he says, "And whoever receives one such little child in my name receives me." That kind of reminds me about Matthew 25:40, where it says, "The king will reply, 'Truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these, you did for me.'" Then in verse 6 he comes at it the different way, and he says, "But whoever offends one of these little ones which believe in me, it were better for him than that a millstone were hanged around his neck and that he were drowned in the depth of the sea." He is so serious about kids. And again in verse 10 he says, "Take heed that ye despise not one of these little ones, for I say unto you that in heaven their angels do always behold the face of my Father which is in heaven." Well, I admit, that one had me a bit baffled. So I checked a version that's a little more down to my style, a children's Bible version, and it goes like this. "Be careful. Don't think these little children are worth nothing. I tell you that they have angels in heaven who are always with my Father in heaven." Folks, every child has an angel. That is so incredible. Let me share one more. "If a man has 100 sheep, but one of the sheep gets lost, he will leave the other 99 sheep on the hill. He will go to look for the lost sheep. And if he finds it, he is happier about that one sheep than about the 99 that were never lost. I tell you the truth, in the same way, your Father in heaven does not want any of these little children to be lost." If you already sponsor, and I know many of you do, God bless you, would you consider another one this morning? Over 80% of the kids on the table back there are not yet Christians. You can write letters. In fact, I would beg you to do that and speak your faith into their lives and even go to visit them. Nearly 10,000 people did that last year alone. What a fabulous opportunity to become a missionary and a mentor to a child who desperately needs you. Just imagine when you get to heaven and your child or children are standing around you, but not just them, but all the people they brought to Christ as well, all thanking you for loving them and changing their course in life. I know that Jose wants me to talk a little bit about child survival. I would like to share a bunch more, but I know that time is an issue, so I will stop here and maybe give me some direction which way you want me to speak about child survival, perhaps the youth development. I had a lovely lady this morning tell me that her child is 18 years old and doing really well in school. We have a youth program that child may just be able to go on to college or tech school or university. And so that's an exciting one. We also now are planting churches in areas where we work, where we need to be. As I mentioned, we need a church to work in an area. So we are now planting. We've planted over 230 churches in the last 8 years in areas in the 25 countries that we work in, where we need to be, where we have to have a church. And we, of course, have to explain a little bit about that $2,000 donation that they're looking for in El Salvador. So, first of all, let me ask, is there any questions? Yes. Sure. Yep. I was asked to explain how the apprenticeship works. Every single child that is in the Compassion program, once they get into the early teens, they let us know what their goals, their dreams are for life. And we can start already working towards those goals. And as young as their early teens, they're already being trained different work skills, and there are different options for them to go and work towards their life's goals. But if they want to do something bigger, and if they qualify for post-secondary, by the time they graduate from high school now, a sponsor can continue to sponsor that child for $41 a month, and that child can continue to go on through college, tech school, or university, get a degree for 4 more years is the maximum, 22, and it doesn't change the cost. It's still $41 a month, like I said. However, you don't go to school for that kind of money, so we have a fund that pays for the difference. So every single child now, all 2 million plus children All 300 in this church that we're talking about all have an opportunity for post-secondary if they actually qualify for the school. Why don't I share child survival a minute? What we learned many years ago is that when a child is brought into a sponsorship program at age 5 or 6, which back then, 20 years ago, is what we did, because everybody did that. It made sense because that's when they're ready to go to school. But we discovered that at 5 or 6 years old, if you're living in the kind of poverty that we deal with, the lowest, the poorest of the poor, that child is already compromised. There's no way they're healthy enough, and the mental capacity is not there. They're just not sharp. So we started a program called Child Survival, where we invite expectant moms to come into the program. That means, whether it's an 11-year-old rape victim, or a 14-year-old girl that made a really bad mistake, or a 30-year-old that's got her 8th child and doesn't know how to stop this, you're invited. Come to our church. Let us support you through your pregnancy. We will be there for the day that the child is born, because where we work, the mortality rate is horrendous, and we've seen massive improvements there already. Then for 1 year, we will support that mom and baby as a little unit. Teach her how to raise her child now. You have to remember, folks, we live in the poorest, or we work in the poorest of the poorest areas. These moms haven't got a clue. They haven't got a clue. So we support her for that 1 year, teach her how to raise her child. She's got all the medical assistance she needs, food, water, you name it. She's part of that church. And then at the same time, we begin to teach her a work skill so she can be self-sufficient someday. And then at 1 year, they go into the sponsorship program. We actually have a couple one-year-old children on the table back there. Those kids just graduated from Child Survival, and they're ready to go into the sponsorship. Then when they graduate from high school, as I just mentioned, we have the youth development program for post-secondary. So we got it covered from the womb to graduation from post-secondary. So it's getting very exciting. Now, I want to explain a little bit really quickly how this $2,000 donation can work. I don't want to get into it really deeply, but there is a process for every one of the 25 countries that we work in. What we do is we ask each church to submit their biggest, most important project. In this case, I don't think they submitted it to Compassion because they want to get it done now. But say they did, and it was deemed not to be one of the top X numbers of programs that El Salvador Compassion feels is the most important at this time. So that means they would probably have to wait another year. But what happens is those programs get distributed to the 14 partner countries that work: Canada, US, Holland, Germany, France, the list, 14 of us anyway. Then we choose which programs we want to fund. So Canada, you know, might choose a couple from El Salvador and one from Haiti and one from Kenya, whatever. And then we fund that. And let me just say, it's the same as our sponsorship. We don't wait until the money comes in. The kids on the table are in the program. We won't wait for sponsors because we have over 80,000 children waiting to be sponsored in these child packs. So we pay for the sponsorship, so we also submit what we want to fund, and we pay for that before, and then we look for donors. But this project isn't on the books. So there's really only one way to get that one funded by people in Canada. So if you sponsor a child from Project 966, you are actually, everybody knows that you can give a birthday present, you can send Christmas money. Even some people have read far enough that they understand that you can do the family gift, but it's funny, not everybody reads all the way to the end to see that you can actually give a project gift as well. So if you are interested in funding this project, this building project to help them finish, really the only way to do it through Compassion is if you sponsor a child from 966, which I believe there are a few already, but we have 3 children on the table from 966. If you sponsor one of those, then you are eligible to donate to that project as well. Now, after saying that, I have to be very clear. We as in Compassion, there's two books you have to read when you work for Compassion. The Bible, obviously, is number one, but When Helping Hurts is a second one, because we believe in their theory. And what that means is we don't believe in the great white savior complex, where we know it all, we know how to do it better, we can do it better for you, all that. We don't believe that. We are there to support them spiritually and financially. We are in the background. And we just help them with the finances. So they tell us what they want. They tell us when, how, whatever. So we cannot tell them, if say one of you today decides to sponsor a child from 966 and you send a check for whatever total, you actually have to let go of that check. And we will say, please put it towards this building project. But if the from the day you write that check and send it in to the day it gets to El Salvador, if something drastic has happened and there is now a new priority for them, not us, to decide, for them to decide, that check will probably go to that. But I got a feeling it would take an earthquake for that to happen, because they want this done. So that's one way that we can get you involved if you do indeed want to support this building project through Compassion. And because it is a Compassion church, unless you actually go down and pay for the material yourself, I think that's probably the only other way to do it. So I would love for you to consider coming and come and sponsor child. I've got three, like I said, from Project 966. If you want, if all three of them get sponsored and you want one from 966, they have a child survival program. Those kids are going to start graduating into the program. To sponsorship, so if you can wait just a little while, we'll get you a child. I'll special request. This little one, Yemi Gonzalez, belongs to 966. Some of you might even know her. It's really cool. In case you are not interested in getting involved in the El Salvador, you want some other country they have your heart for, I have others, other countries, but I have an example here. Yeah. Excuse me, young girl from the Philippines. She's 19. If you're thinking, oh, I'm too old to do a long-term thing, getting a two-year-old or a three-year-old, I don't want to go for 19 years. This young lady had a sponsor but was dropped. She is in her first year of university. So the maximum that this one would be, for example, is three-year commitment. So if you're looking for something shorter term, please see me. We got a whole bunch of teenagers that have lost their sponsors. Let's face it, Calgary economy just is really bad yet, and people just can't afford it anymore, so they're dropping their kids. But so that's why they're on the table. So come see me at the end of the service, and I will answer any and all of your questions, and I would love to sign up a whole bunch of you for sponsoring a child in El Salvador or anywhere else in the world. Thank you so much for your time. I'm so grateful to be here. Jose, thank you for the invitation, for Pastor Gary. He's so on board. He loves what's going on, and he loved what we're talking about. So, yes, thank you, and God bless you.